welcome to Life in the Land of the Ice and Snow. My name is Heather, and I'm here today with my co-host, Mark. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing today, Heather?
I'm doing okay. It's we had such nice weather last weekend, and now it's a bit of a rainy week. So I'm dealing with fall feelings, but I think it's going to turn around.
I don't know about that. I feel like I could hear summer screeching on its brakes and coming to a complete and total stop. But that's
I'm trying to think positive here, man.
Well, maybe I shouldn't be looking out the window. I'd probably feel more positive if I turn my back to it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way to go. Well, our guest today is Lori. And Lori, you are from Scotland, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Wonderful. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Same to you.
Yes, welcome. Okay, you are not in Stockholm, are you?
No, I live in Dalarna.
Ah, all right. Where specifically in Dalarna?
In Borlänge, the ugliest city in Sweden, apparently.
I have heard that.
I've heard that too. I've never been, so.
It's usually people who've never been here who say that.
Okay. I've never said it either, to be fair.
I do feel like, I think I stopped there very briefly one time. So what does Borlänge have?
Well, we have IKEA, which Falun did not get, and that was apparently a big bone of contention for a while. And a giant shopping center. So you know, you realize, you know, when I go straight to these two things, that's what we've got going on. But around the town is just amazing, like the countryside, and if you like outdoor stuff, it's great, a great place to be.
Okay, what kind of outdoor stuff is popular around there?
Well, we have a ski resort just outside the town, which is, I think, like the closest to Stockholm if you're going to. So a lot of people come up for the day from Stockholm to go to it. And then, you know, lots of woods and nature reserves and, all, you know, the usual stuff. Yeah, exactly. And although I did have a friend visiting here once, and I took her to the tourist information center and asked, what can you do here in Borlänge? And she said, well, you can go to Falun. It's only 20 minutes away. So that was good advertising for Borlänge there.
Yeah, it's kind of the classic, you know, top three things to do here are leave, and get out of here. Yeah. I say that not having been there, but that's just what that reminds me of.
Okay, so what brought you to Borlänge, and how long have you been in Sweden?
Well, I've been here since 2015, so that's 9 years now, so quite a while. Feels like, anyway. I don't know how long you've been here.
Oh, I'm coming up on 25 years soon.
All right, a wee bit longer then.
Yeah, just a bit. Mark, I think you're close, though. You're over a decade, right?
Or? Yeah, I'm coming up on, it'll be 12 years at the end of October, so not quite Heather level. But
someday.
Give me some time.
But what brought you to Sweden?
People usually guess pretty quickly. You know, when you're an English speaker here, there's kind of there's usually the first guess is what's her name, you know?
yeah, exactly.
So that
same
was
here.
Yeah, so I guess it's the case for a lot of people. You know, you meet someone in another country, and you know, things get serious, and then the Swede in the relationship says, "Well, you know, we have to move there, right?" I mean,
right.
we can't be having kids here when we could be doing it in Sweden. So that's basically it. So moving over with a little bit of a margin to get settled in, learn the language, and get a job before the kids start coming, you know.
Right. So how did you feel about that, just knowing that you're going to have to adapt to a different culture, you're going to have to learn the language, get a job, all of that?
Well, I was pretty excited about it, because I've always thought, oh, it would be great to live in another country, but I kind of knew deep down I would never have the motivation to just do it. So just having that reason, having someone saying, come on, let's go, made all the difference. And finally I have an excuse and a reason, and I can pretend I'm being forced to to leave. So it was just mainly exciting, getting to start again for nothing. Also, just being a foreigner, I was quite excited about being a foreigner, because I've always just been so fascinated by people who come from other countries and just want to know all about their culture and things. I'm like, oh God, I could be so much more interesting if I was in a different country.
What did you know about Sweden before you came here? Obviously, you had some inside info, but what were your own impressions?
Yeah, well, I actually came here on holiday when I was a kid. Yeah, and slightly odd destination maybe, but to Örebro, and stayed in the campsite there. So for me, Örebro was Sweden. And
interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So I had a little bit of experience of being here, and then of course, like being into music, it was all the artists that there are a lot, you know, Sweden has a lot of musical export.
Yeah, what are your favorites?
Well, like I really love music from lots of different genres, but the Swedish music that I listen to is generally the metal stuff.
Yeah, that's popular here.
So that was how I thought, you know, I'll get over there and I'll start my own Swedish metal band, and it'll be great.
Isn't there quite a scene up there?
Yeah, there's what's the name?
You're not thinking of Sabaton, are you?
Yeah, Sabaton. They're from Falun, you know, and they have their own festival and various other bands as well. And Borlänge is kind of got its reputation, well, maybe it's just here, but as the music city, with quite a few artists from here. So it felt like a good place to move to as someone who's into music and plays music.
Have you been playing music there? I can't help but notice that there's a bass there.
Yeah,
looks like a Fender P bass.
Yeah, actually it's a sort of my first bass kit bass. But yeah, I did start a band the week after I came here, actually.
Nice.
I was dropping my partner off at her orchestra practice, and there was a guy sitting outside, and she just went up to him and said, "Hey, excuse me, do you know anyone who is looking to start a band?" And he went, "Yeah, me." And she went, "Great, here's my boyfriend." And yeah, 9 years later, we're still playing together. We've released an album and everything. So
wow,
that was it was easy. And metal, of course, because I moved to Sweden.
Of course. So what's the name of your band?
We're called Uncle Bucket.
Uncle Bucket,
I love it. Cool. Can we find you on Spotify?
Yeah, all the usual places.
So you met this guy. Was he Swedish?
Yeah, he is. Well, he's extremely Swedish. Probably the most Swedish person I know. After knowing him for about 6 months, I noticed other people called him by a different name. Sometimes people who had known him longer, and I asked him, "What's the deal with this other name you have?" And he went, "Oh, have I not told you? Oh, yeah, I'm from Iraq." So he was born there, but he'd become very, very Swedish.
Mm-hmm. So he'd changed for a Swedish name.
Yeah. And then suddenly all his job applications started getting accepted.
Yeah, sadly, that's the way sometimes. Yep.
I would definitely say my experience is that having an English name has been an advantage. I definitely felt like I was being given opportunities. Like, it was kind of the opposite effect, that people were just trusting me. They were just, you know, I was pretty newly arrived in the country and couldn't really speak the language, but I was, you know, "Oh, would you like to look after my child sometime?" literally like my first job. And yeah, I was given a lot of opportunities, and I felt like especially going to SFE, and in my SFE class there were 12 of us in the class and 11 different countries represented. It was really, it was great, and everyone sat and spoke Swedish in the breaks. But I did feel like I was given a lot of opportunities that maybe others struggled with, and you know, things like looking for a place to live, and all I would do is go around and say, "Oh, I really need a place to live. We need to move out of where we're staying." And someone would get in touch and say, "Hey, yeah, my friend told me that you're looking for a place to live." And I just felt like some of my classmates might not have been offered some of these opportunities, but I don't know.
Yeah, but I would say that Borlänge is probably a little easier than Stockholm to find a place to live.
I would guess,
but still not
Stockholm
super easy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when I first came here, we lived in Rättvik, which is a bit further up, which is kind of famous for being a very a very special. It's got its own sort of culture there, and very everyone knows everyone kind of vibe. And there it was, you know, people come up to me in the supermarket and go, "Oh, you're that Scottish guy who lives on that street just up there. Who are you?" Yeah, you get a reputation.
Was your partner from the area, or how did you end up picking that area?
From Falun. When we were still living in Scotland, she just started applying for jobs and ended up getting one in Rättvik. So we ended up coming over and moving straight there.
Okay, so how did you two meet? Were you going to school together? Was she working there?
No, it's a blind date, actually.
Nice.
Yeah. One of my best friends in Scotland lived in Sweden when she was younger, and so she had this Swedish friend that she would go and have a sauna with sometimes and complain about Scotland because she'd lived in Sweden for 5 years and moved back to Scotland, and so she was missing so much from Sweden coming back home. So they would sit together and complain about Scotland and people don't understand. Why can't they be more Scandinavian? And then my partner was complaining, she can't meet a guy who's this and this and this with this list of requirements. And my friend, very nice of her, she said, oh, that sounds exactly like my friend Laurie. You should meet him.
All right.
That's super sweet.
So when you did move, you said you came to Sweden as a child, but did you have any preconceptions of what Swedish society would be like?
Yeah, having quite a left-leaning social group in Scotland, the feeling was, oh, well, Sweden, they've got it all figured out there. That's where they have proper welfare support and everything's safe and clean and nice and perfect. So that was maybe the image that I had. And of course, yeah, it's true to some degree, or it was when I moved.
You feel it's changing?
It definitely does feel like it's going in a different direction. And also, like, a really big thing for me, being a pacifist, is that it was a neutral country when I moved here. Mm. And now, with no vote or any chance for people to, you know, be given the information, suddenly we are no longer a neutral country. We're in NATO. So I didn't really see that one coming, actually.
Yeah, it's a big change, and definitely doesn't match the global brand that Sweden has had for a long time. I know coming from America, a lot of my friends have said and still say a lot of those same kind of idealized versions of Sweden that unfortunately maybe existed for a few hours in the 70s, but really only exists in our heads now. It's a changing country. But were there other things besides the sort of political landscape that surprised you pleasantly or unpleasantly when you got here finally?
The Swedes I knew before, they talked about how they would get so depressed in Britain because of the lack of seasons. And I never really understood what they meant until I got here. And I realized how important these seasons are, that it's now it is summer. So we do these things because it is the summer. And now it is the autumn. And now we do these things because it is the autumn. And you have this rhythm that's always going, and people kind of place themselves in their life and their routine based on these. I definitely noticed, you know, now in the weekend it was really hot and we went to the beach and no one there because you don't go to the beach in the autumn.
Yeah, sitting outdoors too, that's what I noticed this week. It's like, oh, now I can sit anywhere I want. This was so packed, but now because it's officially not summer, there's plenty of seats outside to be had. It's not that time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like this really deep-seated thing, and this it's a really nice thing, I think. And you start to get into it, but you know, when you're coming into those first months of winter and you see it ahead of you, it can be pretty rough.
I think the worst right now is I've been seeing ads for book your Christmas Yule board, your Christmas company dinner already. That's been driving me a bit crazy. I don't want to think about the winter yet. But what are some things, let's think about that. What are some things that are very like typical Swedish autumn? October 4th is Cinnamon Bun Day. So there's one thing starting into the pastry holiday season.
Everything has a day. It's great.
What were you guys going to say? What do you think about fall activities?
You have one,
Laurie. Well, it's because I'm like quite an outdoor person. So for me, it's hiking season. You know, this is because summer, I don't like the heat and no one likes the mosquitoes, so for me summer is kind of hide and survive, and then autumn I can get out and I can cycle and hike and all that things, so it's kind of the most active time of year for me.
Do you think there's anybody who likes the mosquitoes just anywhere? I don't disagree with you, but it just got me wondering, like, you know, there must be someone who's like, no, I'm actually into it.
I think bird enthusiasts, maybe. I don't know, birds,
yes,
like,
you
mosquitoes.
Ecosystem enthusiasts, like, abstractly, maybe, and which I would also count myself on that list, I suppose, but...
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I thought of one. Now I can't think of what it's called, but November 1st, like, Alla Helgons Dag. All Saints Day, right?
Yeah, right.
Where you light candles and go to the graveyards, which is, that's pretty metal, I would say. It actually went, I'll tell you, one time, maybe a couple years into living here, I went to Skogskyrkogården, you know that?
Yes.
The forest cemetery in...
It's a UNESCO heritage site, actually.
Yeah. Do you know about it, Laurie? It's a
I haven't heard about that.
It's a huge, quite beautiful cemetery in a forest, like it sounds. It's got some like modernist buildings in it, but it's primarily just this giant cemetery. I went there once for some reason, just I was going for a walk with my partner, and it was snowing, and it was like this forest cemetery, and I said, this is the most metal thing I have ever experienced. I recommend it in a snowstorm, above all, if you want to feel metal.
I recommend it on the All Saints Day. I live near there, and I would say quite a lot of people from the city come out for that because it's such a special place to have that. And it gets so popular, they actually have hot dog booths outside where they're selling hot dogs before you go into the graveyard, which I always find kind of weird.
It undercuts the solemnity a bit, perhaps.
Yeah,
but, you know,
I think so. But it's quite beautiful. Everybody brings candles, and this place, especially since it's in a forest, it's so just completely dark except for those candles everywhere. Mm. It's a really moving and special event. I mean, I don't know anybody in the graveyard besides Greta Garbo, but so I don't have anyone to visit, but it's still like, it kind of moves you. It's really nice. Sorry I don't describe it as metal, but well, I can see that too.
Yeah, well, that's a different night and a different vibe.
Ah, yes,
sure.
Yes,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it is really special and beautiful. Like, there is this like remembrance and like the visual power of seeing all these candles lit representing people and the love that and memory of people have of these people that have left us. It is quite powerful in all seriousness. But speaking of metal, though, and seasons, I mean, does the winter fuel your metal? It's not a leading question, is it?
I mean, in a practical sense, yes, because you can't go outside and do anything, so we stay inside and record music. That's kind of become the pattern now that we write music in the rest of the year and then spend those cold, dark weekends inside recording it. Yeah, and I suppose you're inspired by the depression of it all.
Is your partner also a musician? You mentioned that she's in an orchestra.
She plays trumpet. So she was playing in the, what would you call it, the National Guard, I suppose, the Hemvärn.
Oh,
but,
cool.
But she's taken a break from it because it was all getting a little bit military after the NATO thing. So see how it goes. But no, she's a great trumpet player. And our son is now learning trumpet as well, which means that I have to learn as well, which has been cool. I play saxophone, so it's, you know, they're real rival instruments. You don't play both saxophone and trumpet. So I feel like I'm betraying my saxophone a little bit.
Is like Borlänge more of a trumpet vibe and Falun's more of a saxophone vibe, and it's like a rivalry that will never be bridged?
Maybe.
By you?
Yeah, maybe. That's it. I'm the one to bring the people together. No, I mean, Borlänge has the you know, the steelworks, and it's I don't know if you have that connection in the States, but in the UK there are a lot of the, you know, the miners' bands and industrial cities. They'd have the people would get together and play in these brass ensembles.
Well,
cool. But that's been a tradition here, so definitely. Yeah, and then of course the military, they've had an army base here for a long time, and so that's the military band and everything. I think the saxophone is funny because, you know, I've seen a lot of concerts in Sweden, Swedish artists, and it's become a bit of a pattern that a guy will just run out onto the stage and play an amazing sax solo sometime. At some point, I'm just going, when's the sax man coming? Because I work at a place called Dalhalla, if you've heard of it.
Yeah, I have.
Basically, it's a music venue built in the bottom of an old quarry. Like semi-abandoned quarry. They built a huge stage in the bottom, and it's got 6,000 seats. And yeah, concerts all summer, basically. And so I see them, you know, night after night, these concerts, and I go, when's the sax man coming? Quite often there'll be a sax man. So
that's a pretty fun job if you like music. What are you doing there?
I direct the video that goes out on the big screen for the people sitting at the back.
Very cool. How did you get into that?
Well, I trained as a sound engineer and musician in Scotland, and I kind of transitioned into filmmaking as well, because musicians don't have any money, basically. So I ended up getting into filmmaking and had a little film company there. And then when I came here and didn't speak the language, and I ended up in Rättvik, and I thought, okay, right, I'm in the middle of the woods. There can't possibly be anything to do with the music industry or techie stuff. And then, of course, this huge venue is there, right there. So yeah, I just asked, hey, I don't speak Swedish yet, but can I come and lift some heavy stuff the first year I was here? And they were great. And and I said, please don't speak English with me. Just speak Swedish and point and say it louder until I understand.
That's the key.
Yeah, so I was there lifting heavy stuff, and then I became a camera operator there, and then being the image producer, and I can't even remember what it's called in English. That's really embarrassing. So yeah, I just do that. I mean, I do that part time in the summer, and the rest of the year I work in schools.
Have you gotten to meet any exciting artists?
Yeah, I mean, I get to chat with people every once in a while. I mean, unfortunately, it doesn't make for very exciting podcasts, but they're all extremely professional and polite.
I like that. I think that's good. I think we lead too much with gossip and negativity in our culture as it is. So it's always good to hear that most people are cool. That's one of my theories of life.
Yeah, I mean that that's it. And it's very like positive. But I would ruin people's reputations if I gave you names and said, oh yeah, well, you know, went out on stage and destroyed a whole lot of stuff, and then he came back and said, excuse me, would it be possible to have some lukewarm water for my throat?
You were talking about deciding to be in Sweden to raise kids and everything. What are some of the differences that you see, or that I imagine that you still have friends and family back in Scotland? Can you think of like some differences in raising a family in Sweden as compared to Scotland?
Yeah, well, I would say the biggest difference would maybe be the age. I mean, no one my age was having kids when we had our son, because they couldn't afford it, basically. So it's just having that financial security and that feeling of, you know, having the system supporting you. So it definitely felt like, you know, you realize that people in your peer group, they're all kind of on the same track. So people around 27, 28 were all starting to have their kids. And again, that's maybe it's because we're out a bit more rural here, that you know, I guess in Stockholm you probably have the same thing. Well, you have to have a really secure job and be able to, you know, have a place that's suitable. But I mean, yeah, I'd say that's the biggest one. And then of course the childcare. And yeah, unfortunately, like my female friends back in Scotland, they have to make that choice of, do I stop working or do I pay my whole salary to pay for childcare so that I can keep my career going?
Yeah,
later.
I didn't know it was like that in Scotland. It's definitely like that in the U.S. And I've known several people that say, what's the point of working? It's the exact same as paying for daycare, so I might as well just quit my job and watch the kid myself. I thought maybe in the U.K. that it would be a little bit better than in the US, but I guess maybe not when it comes to that.
I think Scotland's made some big steps recently, and there's free childcare has now arrived there. Like there are quite a lot of big differences between Scotland and the rest of the UK as well. So Scotland tends to be a lot more kind of left-leaning generally. But mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. But people who had kids around the same time as us, they had a tougher time with it. You know, you're paying your whole salary for childcare, and then also you have your mum has to work part time, so the grandmother is then also taking time off work to come and get the kid because the childcare doesn't even cover the whole working day.
Oh.
I don't know, it's just mad. And then of course, and I tell people, yeah, well, I've had my 7 months of paternity leave, and they go, oh, that must be amazing for you. Well, yeah, it's great for me, but it's even better for my partner because she gets to go back to work. That's the point.
I love that about Sweden and the amount of time that you get off. I don't even think they accept children into daycare until they're about one. Is that still the way it is? Or you have to be close to age one. They won't take them before that.
Yeah, I think that's about the age, but I'm not totally sure.
No, I know I tell Swedes that in the States, a lot of people, they have to put their kids into childcare like 8 weeks old, and people find it so shocking over here. But that's the way it is. People don't get time off from work. They have to go right back. They don't have a, you know, support system there. And here, with the generous parental allowance, then it's wonderful that you have the time until they're one or even a little bit past. And then, yeah, you don't have to pay anything. All the kids just go into the daycare, and it's I really enjoy that system. Also, not having to worry about medical bills or saving up for college. That's a big plus as well, for sure.
And I can totally see how people get a sort of study addiction here. You finish one course, you know, I'll just do one more then. Oh, go on then, one more. I've been a bit guilty of that myself, because I don't know, just... Maybe it's being from Scotland, but it's like, it's free, so I can just have as much as I want. It's like being at a buffet.
Yeah.
Like, I'll do one more course. Go on then.
Gotta get your money's worth.
I was just gonna ask what you've been learning. What kind of courses have you been taking?
Well, starting from doing SFE and learning Swedish, right. Basically, like, towards the end of doing the course, I got asked if I could come in at about 10 minutes notice and teach a class in the in the high school the gymnasium that was there without any preparation. And I went in and I did it, and it went well. And then they asked again, and then I ended up getting a job there as a teacher, which then became 8 years of being an English teacher.
Wow.
Yeah. So in the end, I got my teaching qualification as a music teacher, you know, as a technicality, because I had a music degree. I've only taught English. But yeah, and then after that, I thought, oh, well, if I did another couple of courses, then I could also be an English teacher as well. So I ended up doing some linguistics as well. And it's lots of fun.
Are you just teaching the kids, making them memorize Robert Burns poems? Or
yeah, I've done a little bit about Burns, actually.
So I was
teaching for 8 years, and the last 2 years of it, or the last 3 years of it, I was studying to be a teacher, and I finished the teaching degree and burned out doing it, as you do, as I call it, the Svensk klassiker, burning out. So I ended up stopping teaching. So I got my teaching qualification, gave up teaching, and now I'm now working as the IT guy at the local school, which is great. I love it. I love messing around with cables and things.
A true musician.
Exactly, yeah.
How did you find it teaching at a Swedish school? I find the school systems quite different here from what I'm used to.
Yeah, it was, I mean, a massive difference. I probably as well just the time between myself going to school and starting to teach. But it's huge difference. The biggest thing that the kids get to decide things. They have power.
That's weird.
which is generally a really good thing. But there's definitely what would you say? I don't know, there's definitely friction there. I feel like we're in a transitionary period in the school system, that it's gone very, very far in one direction. It's trying to go in a different direction and say, getting stuck a little bit in between.
You mean in terms of like the privatization and the variety of other like legislative changes?
Yeah, there's that. And then there's also just the culture of school, and you know where the focus should be, whether it should be, you know, the kids' democratic rights, or whether it should be what they're actually learning and the academic side of it, or the social side. And you know, because of course we're dealing with massive mental health crisis in everywhere in the world, and we need to sort that before they can start learning anything and recovering from the pandemic as well. Yeah, so it definitely feels like it's in flux, I would say, more than
anything
else. How
was it with the phone situation? Because in my kids' school, I found it honestly ridiculous that the kids could have their phones all the time and they were constantly on the phone. I didn't understand why they didn't have to turn them in at the beginning of class or put them down.
Yeah, well, here's the problem. We've now got a generation of teenagers who were literally given a phone when they were in their cribs. They've had it there the whole time. A lot of parents have got by without having to do a lot of parenting, because if your kid's upset, you give them an iPad. If the kid's upset, you put a screen in front of them and they'll shut up. And then suddenly they get to a certain age at school and you say, well, why can't you just sit there and listen to someone talk about something boring for 40 minutes? Why can't you do that?
And yeah.
So you've got this really deep seated addiction as well of, you know, always having this entertainment on tap and never having to be bored in your whole life. And suddenly we're telling them, no, you have to put that away and you have to choose us. And then you go into the staff room, of course. What's everyone doing in there? And so we adults are so much worse with our devices because we haven't had that training when we were younger on how to at least be able to focus on two things at the same time, or, you know, put it down when the time is right. So I think a lot of teachers, they choose the tactic of, well, I'm going to take it upon myself to help them make the right choices and choose to put the phone away. But then, of course, you have then a lot of schools saying, well, no, actually, we're going to completely take them away, which has its own challenges. I'd say, yeah. I'm on the fence, having done both. Like the school I'm at now, we've just implemented a complete ban on phones, which of course ends up in, oh, but this kid has to have it because of this, and this kid has to, and these kids, they'll hand it in at this time. So you end up that they all just have them.
So we had this study that came out this month about that you shouldn't let your kids have screen time until after age 2. I don't know if that's just a Swedish study
than a study, wasn't it? I'm kind of speaking ignorantly here, which is dangerous, but isn't it actually some kind of official recommendation?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
I think it's fair to ask these questions, though, and I mean, I think, not that you need my validation or anything, but I don't hear you like moralizing per se, just more like asking the questions and giving your experience that like these are tough things and the impacts on just running a school, even just purely from like an administrative level of managing a phone situation, is very hard, let alone the actual implications for the kids and the parents and the teachers. So I think they're all really valid questions that we're just grappling with as a society. And I definitely hear the moral panic thing sometimes. And we won't know until the future.
No, exactly.
But it's definitely a challenge already now, whether it's a panic or not.
But I think it's also an important thing. A lot of us immigrants who raise kids here, we're dealing with a totally different system, not just in age, but in culture and school systems. I mean, I've had to learn with my children how things even work here because it's so vastly different than the U.S. So I think it's interesting to hear from the side of people who are working in the schools and learn a bit more about, okay, why is it like this? And, I don't know, make us feel a little better about it.
Do you feel like working in the school helped you kind of have a more optimistic idea about the Swedish school system, or less so? I think that you kind of already answered that, maybe.
Well, but no, I think I've maybe been a bit harsh. You know, I've just, you know, come home from a long day at work, so I'm going, oh, the schools, it's terrible, it's a disaster, it's all going down the drain. But actually, no, I do think there's so much that I think they're underappreciated, definitely, and you know, the thing of just of supporting the individual students and really giving them what they deserve. And, you know, a simple thing like, I guess, all our kids having their own language taught to them and having that as being a right, completely unheard of in Britain.
For people who don't know, you're entitled for your kid to have home language classes that the school must offer in whatever if you have like a parent from another country. Then your child can have extra lessons in that parent's home language, which is really wonderful. I think it's a great program. Some other things, if we're going to say some of the positive things about the Swedish school system, at least that I notice, is all the kids learn like sewing, cooking, also like shop with building, things like that. And where I went to school, it was more you had to choose that. And so not everybody got that experience. And I think all of these things are very important just for life and growing as a person. And I love that that's required for everybody. I mean, my kids sew better than I do, and they probably cook better as well.
But yeah, I mean, I remember having to make the decision between studying computing or music, I mean, ooh, because those are not the things that the same person would want to learn. Of course, there's the two different kinds of people, musicians, and of course now that's ridiculous. You know, most musicians these days are making music on a computer.
We could start wrapping up now, but I'm wondering, do you have any maybe tips for around the area of Borlänge or Falun? I mean, you've already talked about this great mining quarry.
Dalhalla.
Concert.
Yeah,
Dalhalla.
Come to Dalhalla. It's not just a concert; it's an experience. No, it's really, it's really fantastic. You know, unless it's raining, and then but then and everyone's got a story of when they went to Dalhalla and it rained. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And yeah, just come and see Dalhalla. It's a fantastic place to be. It's just as good as you imagine.
It's a good tagline.
Yeah, exactly. And Örebro, I'm thinking as my childhood Swedish paradise, Örebro. Great city.
Apparently also good camping too. So
Yeah.
And they have a castle, so you know, there's that. Of course, who doesn't have a castle around here? Huh?
Yeah, of course. Well, from Scotland, you know, everyone lives in a castle.
That's true. Yes. That's right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's been really interesting. And we will definitely check out your band on Spotify.
Oh, so brilliant.
One more time. It's Bucket. What is it?
Uncle Bucket.
Uncle Bucket. Mm. Okay.
Think of a bucket of uncles.
Yes, I will. Now I won't get that image out of my head. Lots of little uncles in a bucket.
Arguing with me about politics.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, the theme of our album is miscommunication, you know.
Oh, so, there you go.
Perfect.